You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met. We return once again to No Plot, Only Lore, the favorite podcast of Elyon, a little fishing village north of Evermeet. Today's sponsor as well, Sir Britt's Fish and Chips, located in Sherwood Park, the highest quality seafood you can get a full day's drive from the ocean.
See, when I wrote that, I was expecting you to do a joke about, like, fish and chips in Elyon.
Oh.
But, like, Sherwood Park, we can fucking roll with that. Let's, yeah.
Sherwood Park also just sounds like a fantasy town.
Okay.
Like, our literal logo is Robin Hood, so.
Right. When I moved to Victoria,
yeah,
the first thing that I noticed is, one, instead of putting numbers on any of the streets like a sane city would, all of the streets are named.
Right.
And two, 80% of those names sound like shit from a fantasy novel.
I will say.
I lived in an.
Go ahead.
I lived in a neighborhood called Fernwood for a while, which just sounds like some fucking elves live there.
Yeah, no, names on streets is some small town bullshit, and it's a sign of a maturing populace when you finally are like, hey, you know what? People need to get around unaided. You can't just expect to, like, memorize the layout of the whole town. Because that's what
I'm telling you. For Victoria.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you want to grow, it's like, oh, right, people are going to come here who are new to the area and won't have memorized everything. Maybe we should make that more convenient. Maybe this is like, I don't know, like, what do they call it? That, like, aggressive architecture that's designed to keep out newcomers because Victoria doesn't want any more of you.
I knew I had gone native when somebody asked me for directions, and I didn't even hesitate to be like, oh, yeah, no, you just head down Quadra until you hit Yates and then take a right, and then you're on Blanchard. Right? And it's just, like, immediate in my head where all of these places are.
Yeah.
But if I hadn't lived here for a while, I would have no idea where I was. And trying to find stuff, like, if I didn't have Google Maps, I was so lost.
Yeah, like, I've lived in Sherwood Park a long time, and even now, if someone needs directions to something that's, like, not on one of the main roads, you're not getting them from me. Like, I know the regions of Sherwood Park. Like, oh, mm-hmm. Fir is in the tree section. I know where that street is. But yeah,
well, my favorite place to live for, like, directionality stuff was Calgary.
Okay.
Like, Calgary is just laid out in a fucking grid.
Yes. Here's the thing though. So is Edmonton, but they realize that, like, don't start the grid in the middle right away. And I think it's a better system. Now, that being said, we have grown to the point where, you know, it's irrelevant. Now you do need to occasionally refer to Southwest instead of everything being in the Northwest. But
well, and, like, there is a point where you get to, like, 10,043rd Street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we don't necessarily want to be dealing with that. We're like, yeah, I really like how Calgary's got it laid out in the grid system. You're going to the Northeast. You start counting from the center of town. You go north, the numbers go up. You go south, the numbers go down.
Right.
Right? That's perfect. When you hit the middle, the numbers start going up as you go south.
Yeah. Right?
It's so simple, so easy to navigate around that city, even if you have no idea where the hell you are. Edmonton as well had a fair bit of that, although there are huge chunks of Edmonton that just decide to go in, like, weird swirly patterns for no reason.
Oh.
And you will get lost in Millwoods.
Okay.
Like, so there is...
Tangent for a second. My mom's degree is in urban planning, and there's nothing that makes her more mad than what they've done with Millwoods. And the problem is, like, the rest of the city was on a very nice structured grid pattern, and it was easy to navigate, and, like, neighborhoods actually looked nicer. And then they had this misconception that if you make all the roads swirly and curly, so it's actually intentionally harder to navigate, people will slow down and neighborhoods will be safer. And there's no evidence for that.
No. Right? Instead, you just end up having a lot more difficulty with emergency services who can't find your house.
Correct. And a lot more, like, angry drivers who just, like, are so enraged they aren't paying attention to the road properly.
Or the people who will, like, cut through your yard because they can't be arsed to try and figure out where the intersection is.
Correct.
Right? Like, it's just, yeah, there's parts of my hometown that are like that as well. Like, there's neighborhoods where they've purposefully made them more difficult to navigate. And all that happened was now you had a bunch of teenagers jumping your fences every week.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, it was brutal. Anyway, no plot, only lore, brought to you by Elian Fish and Chips and also someplace in Sherwood Park, I guess.
Sir Britz is an establishment.
Sir Britz.
Yeah. That's not, I don't even think that's the one I said. I think I combined Sir Winston's and.
Okay.
Or, I don't know. Whatever. Anyways. For whatever reason.
Did you have a chance to try any of the fish and chips places in Victoria?
No, I didn't. I was only there for like a day or two, and then I just was kind of stuck at my buddy's house. But when I'm out there again, I will. The ones here, not awesome, and I know they're not awesome. For whatever reason, my grandfather loves the fish and chips here. I'm like,
all right.
Like, Grandpa, all you've right. had better stuff in Ontario straight off the lake, and you're telling me this is like, oh. A destination?
No. Victoria's got like a whole tour you can do for fish and chips.
That sounds like peak fat kid behavior, and I'm down for it.
Yeah, one of the weirdest things for me is that there's a bunch of fish and chips places in Victoria that don't sell fish and chips.
What?
They just sell Chinese food.
What?
Yeah, so the place is called like Frank's Fish and Chips, and then you go in and it's just Chinese food.
Why would they do that? That's
because the family bought a fish and chips place, never changed the name of the business, and then started serving Chinese food instead.
That doesn't sound like a good plan, though, to like retain customers or like not just like piss off people who walk through the door.
There's at least two places that I can think of in town that are like that, where like one of them does have fish and chips on the menu. But it's mostly Chinese food.
Yeah, just don't order that because it's not like.
It's not their best stuff.
Yeah.
And it's probably not even good. It's there to be a Chinese food place.
It's probably not even fish.
It's fish, but it's like bad, like third rate cod.
It's anyway. Fish spelled with a PH.
What's that? GHOTI?
Fishhook.
Spells fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorite bands from the 90s.
So we're going to talk about genre today and not just fish and chip restaurants in places that actually exist.
Fish and genres.
Fish and genres. What's your favorite? Well, let's do two sections here. So what is your favorite genre for non-tabletop fiction? So like movies, books, that sort of thing.
Sci-fi. Just general sci-fi. Like obviously like with my 40k you know leanings, like grimdark sci-fi or whatever is fine, but just anything that has, you know, lasers and spaceships, I'm down with.
Cool. Mine changes all the time, which is true for like most of my tastes. Like if I have a thing that I like, wait a few years and I'll be off of that and onto something else. Right now it is progression fantasy.
What is, so I don't even know what that is.
So progression fantasy is a subgenre of fantasy that is focused on characters becoming more powerful over the course of the story. It's absolutely 100% escapist power fantasy power fantasy nonsense. It's really bad. It's got the writing quality of fan fiction. Uh-huh. Some of it is like good fan fiction. Some of it is abysmal. But a lot of it is based on like Chinese wuxia.
I was going to say, it sounds like kung fu. Like,
yeah. And then there's also like a lit RPG section of it that's just like the world now has the system of a video game. Right? Like aliens showed up and their idea of a good time is to make humans fight in a video game style beat down until there's one person left. And for some reason, I've been gobbling it up I've been spoon-feeding myself progression fantasy for the last, like, year and a half, and some of it's great, and some of it's terrible, and I don't care. Just put it in my eyeballs.
Huh. I'm not going to check it out, but I do...
I don't recommend.
No.
For our listeners, I do not recommend it.
You're right. Your endorsement was enough to keep me away.
Yeah.
Like, I do love a kung fu movie, you know, stuff like that, but... I feel like the progression in what you're talking about is toxic.
Okay. There is one that I will recommend outside of the norm for progression fantasy. And it's called Beware of Chicken.
New.
It's about a guy who dies and is reincarnated in the body of like the young ascendant master of a kung fu gym.
Okay.
Right after all of that guy's like quote unquote friends have just beaten him to within an inch of his life.
Oh, great.
And so rather than stay there and learn kung fu and become a kung fu master, he decides, fuck this, I'm going to go become a farmer.
Okay.
And that's exactly what he does. He takes some of the sacred herbs from the kung fu place that he was at. He brings them to some piddleshit little place in the middle of nowhere. He clears out some area for a farm, and he starts farming.
Okay.
And because he is doing that in a way that is in tune with the world and the way that their energy system works and the chi and all of that, just through farming, he slowly becomes a kung fu master.
Oh, God.
And like the food that he's creating has a bunch of like chi infused into it, and so like the chicken that he gets starts to become like self-aware.
Oh,
and
no.
Also becomes a kung fu master. It's so fucking dumb and it's so fucking brilliant. I would highly recommend Beware of Chicken to everyone forever. It's so good.
Ugh. I'm fine with like I want my stuff to take itself seriously. Mm-hmm. And
it is a parody. It is a parody. But it's one of those parodies that is strongest because it engages with the thing that it's making fun of in an understanding and empathetic way.
Okay. I haven't seen anything do that since Kung Fu Hustle.
It's got very Kung Fu Hustle vibes.
Okay.
Yeah. If you are going to pick up any progression fantasy stuff, I think probably the easiest entry to it would be Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Oh, my friend has been reading that at work, and he's given me little snippets of information about the story, and it sounds batshit insane.
It is absolutely batshit insane, and I generally would not recommend this genre to anybody, but Dungeon Crawler Carl is fun. And then Beware of Chicken would be the other recommendation. Yeah. So that's my choice for like genre that I am most keyed into right now outside of the tabletop role-playing space. What genre are you most keyed into inside the TTRPG space?
It's fantasy. I don't know if Dungeons & Dragons is considered like high fantasy, but like
it is, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I dig in my role-playing experience. I have tried other stuff and sometimes it works, but overall, yeah, it's just sticking to your high fantasy stuff. It's what I know best and how to like inhabit the world the best. Like, there's other stuff that I can kind of make my way through. Like, if we're doing a 40K campaign, as much as I love the setting, I'm more familiar with thinking inside of high fantasy than I am thinking with inside of Grimdark.
Right. So, like, the urge to just reach for a sharpened piece of metal as your preferred weapon is just kind of there.
Basically. I kind of forget sometimes, like, if you're playing a 40K game, it's like, yeah, you have a gun, you just shoot them. You know?
Okay. Going back to like progression fantasy for a second. One of the series that I'm reading is actually like the trope of it is that it's at the end of the progression. Right? Okay. So it's like end game of the universe.
Yeah.
And so it has a lot of the same tropes that you see in progression fantasy. Like you've got your people who do magic and you've got your like quote unquote combat arts that are like superpowered versions of Kung Fu or whatever. And one of the characters in the most recent book for that has a combat art that is specifically guns.
Okay.
And I fucking love it.
It's gun fu.
I love the idea. It is gun fu. And also she is the pilot of a Megazord.
Oh god.
Or Voltron. More of a Voltron. Because it is humanoid, but they do eventually combine, maybe. Anyway. That series is also great, but I'm not going to suggest that one to you until you've read Beware of Chicken.
Not going to happen.
Hard same, though, for the TTRPG space.
Yep.
I am not a purist. I don't care if there is some sci-fi in my fantasy. I don't care if you're bringing in like other genres to fantasy, but in almost every circumstance, there is going to be an element of fantasy to the role playing that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And luckily I am a forever DM, so I get to decide what is included in the world.
So. Yeah. So just do whatever you want. There's no consequences.
Just do whatever I want. Yeah. Magic forever. So I guess we don't have to talk about any other like genres.
Oh, those are the only genres that exist. There's no other genres.
Yeah. No, they don't. If they do, they don't matter. No, but, I don't know. What other genres do you think are good for role-playing games? Because, like, I think we've both played a few that aren't fantasy.
Well, hold on. Let's can we maybe take a second to, like, actually, like, define genre? And
absolutely not.
Yeah. No. Oh, okay. Well, all right.
Can't do it. No. Undefinable. No, like, what is a genre? What goes into a genre?
There's genre, there's setting, and then I think we also need to talk about how the, like, system interacts with genre before we say which ones, like, are good or bad for that, right?
Sure.
So, setting, how about you give me the difference between a setting and a genre?
Right. So, a setting is the physical location where a story is taking place. Mm-hmm. I guess not necessarily physical, but it is the space in which the story takes place. A genre is the collection of tropes that are typically associated with a specific type of story. So when you're engaging with those tropes, they are going to evoke that quote-unquote genre, that style of story, that type of storytelling, as they are becoming evoked, right? So, like, you can tell a story that isn't a horror story, but still engage with a bunch of horror story tropes, and people will think that it is a horror story.
Right.
Right, so, like, I think a really good example of that would be Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Because Cabin in the Woods, it starts off seeming very much like a horror story. There are definitely horror elements to this story, but it's actually like an adventure slash eldritch mystery, sort of.
No, that's a great example of yeah, like, first of all, Cabin in the Woods is brilliant.
A great movie.
It's taking a ton of elements from the horror genre, but using them as, like, set pieces and, like, backdrop mm-hmm. to what the story actually is. It gets you mentally into that, like, horror space. And then it's like, no, it's not a horror movie, though, because we're going to subvert it every time. You know?
Well, and that's one of the reasons that the movie works, is because it sets up your expectation of genre by playing with all of the tropes of that genre and then rug pulls you in the third act for what it actually is. Spoiler alert for Cabin in the Woods. It's like 15 years old. So yeah, that would be genre to me. It's just like the collection of tropes that you're interacting with to establish what type of story you're telling.
Okay, great. I can get behind you on that one.
Okay. You're not going to argue with me on it?
No, that sounds more or less like how I would have defined it.
Okay.
Now, there's also the temptation. Like, no, you know what? Never mind. I almost had half a thought, and I've abandoned it. So, goodbye, train.
Peace out, thought. We didn't even need you. Half-formed nonsense. Get the fuck out of here. So, yeah, for genre, there are a lot of different ways that you can interact with different genres. And genres also overlap. And I think that's an important point. Like, my son and I are going through the Marvel movies right now. We're not watching all of them. I'm just watching the ones that are good. So no Iron Man 2.
But it's so important to set up Iron Man 3.
Which we're also not watching. But one of the things that I thought was interesting is that the first Captain America movie is a superhero movie.
Yeah.
But it's also a war movie.
Yes.
The second Captain America movie is a superhero movie and a thriller.
A spy thriller. Yeah.
And playing with those genres gives some depth to the movies that they would have lacked otherwise.
Yes. Yeah, like, so you just have superheroes as a set piece and not as, like, as soon as they started making, like, superhero a type of movie, they started getting worse.
Agreed.
You know, there's a formula they've come up with for what a superhero movie is. It turns out that's just a bad movie.
Not always, but very often.
Mostly.
Like, mostly.
More often than not.
Like, they are essentially wish fulfillment with a hollow antagonist that is set up to show off the superhero's cool powers.
Yes.
And without that secondary layer of storytelling, it's really just Ayn Randian.
Ew.
In a way. Yeah, no, it's not good.
That's not just a phrase, like, I was thinking I would hear about superhero movies, but
just pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. You have your own power to make good in the world, and you only need to do that for your own aggrandizement. Superheroes are an essentially right wing concept.
Ah.
Sorry. I've also had some difficulty engaging with that.
I should say.
But yeah, like, having a spy thriller, having a war movie, having a coming of age flick with the first Spider-Man movie, for the first Iron Man movie, it was a redemption arc story of a man who was morally dubious learning to be a good person. Arguably.
Learning to pretend to be a good person.
Learning to pretend to be a good person. And hopefully stopping making stuff to blow the skin off of brown children.
We're never going to stop that. This is America.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well for his dad or whatever that quote is. But yeah, like, we're engaging with those tropes, because part of the reason that we're watching the Marvel movies is because they're part of Thor's list.
He has a list.
Capital L list. Yeah, he has a list of, like, media that I think he should engage with before he's 18. And, like, stuff that I think is important for being able to interact with pop culture and the zeitgeist in a meaningful way. And so, like, the Marvel movies are on there. I've got Monty Python. We've got The Matrix and Shrek movies, and just, like, anything that's kind of, like, culturally important.
You be careful with that Monty Python stuff, because you introduce it too early and that becomes their whole personality, and then you've kind of ruined high school for them.
Part of my strategy on that was to introduce it too early so he doesn't quite get it.
Oh, yeah. That weird show my dad liked with jokes about rabbits and dicks or whatever.
Yeah. So like, he's interacting with, like, some of the top level stuff.
Oh, yeah,
Holy Grail. But like we haven't dived into Life of Brian or anything.
Oh yet. Man, that is my personal favorite.
Surprising no one.
What? All right, whatever.
The one about Jesus?
The one about Jesus, but it's a very smart look at the Bible and whatever. Mm-hmm. It's fine. It's good. You should like it.
Yeah, it is good. And I do. All right. So establishing the genre is just a pile of tropes that tell you what type of story you're telling.
Yeah.
How do you see systems interacting with that well, and how have you seen it interacting with them poorly?
So systems, well, first of all, the way that systems interact with genre is it should be a lot more like straightforward than it is, I think. Mm-hmm. Systems are about helping enable the tropes of the genre to like come to the front. And a lot of those things can be really tricky to do. I would say, I think for me, it's easier to take like bad examples. Like, I don't think Dungeons and Dragons is particularly good at doing like a mystery noir.
Agreed.
You know, I don't think the 40K license or the whatever their version of RPG is particularly good at doing like a dungeon crawl, you know?
Romance? A romance plot? That would be hilarious.
Yeah.
I kind of want a 40K romance game.
You say that, but then then you have to watch someone like me role-playing how their character tenderly kisses an orc, and no one comes out on top.
Speak for yourself, sir. I think that like one of the things that set me off in this direction was a discussion I was having on Threads about a rash of quote unquote cozy games.
Oh yeah.
That are trying to emulate the style of Studio Ghibli.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I have found those games is fundamentally missing is interacting with a trope that is present in a lot of Ghibli films that isn't cozy.
Right.
And it's this idea of like a slowly creeping darkness or badness that is going to happen because your characters are interacting with the world in a way that wasn't intended.
Right. Of course.
Right. And sometimes it's right up in front, right? Like you look at Spirited Away and suddenly your parents are pigs.
Right.
Sometimes it's a little more subtle, like the way that the ocean is acting weirder slowly and slowly over the course of Ponyo until finally her dad flips a table and there's a weird flood.
Yeah.
And because those games aren't interacting with that trope, with that part of the thing, it's a nice cozy game that doesn't really have any tension in it.
Yeah. For the record, I despise cozy as a genre.
I love it. Surprising, I think, exactly zero people.
Yeah.
The idea of cozy fiction is fun for me. I like the idea of like a low stakes, high personal investment.
Yeah.
Fiction, whatever that genre vehicle happens to be. I don't do it a lot in my games, mostly because the players that I play with crave blood. they just want to stab things and take their stuff.
Yeah, they got strong murder hobo tendencies.
Usually, yeah. There was a moment in one of my recent sessions where my players had to like sit back for a second and be like, I am really surprised at how quickly we turned to torture. It did not take very much at all for us to be like, cool, we're just going to hurt you until we get the information that we want.
Yeah, and you were just like, I am not, just so you know, like, surprised at all.
No, I was prepared for that. I have a whole system for it.
Yeah.
we've done this before. Not with this crew, but yeah, if you guys need to roll some dice to torture a guy, I've got you covered. Yeah. So the cozy genre doesn't necessarily turn into a tabletop role-playing game super easy.
Right.
Without that tension. Like, I would be interested to see how a cozy game would work with that creeping darkness built into the mechanics. Yeah. Because I like the idea of a slow burn. I like the idea of, like, exploring interpersonal relationships and having space for that in the game. And then suddenly there's a weird flood and there's stuff from the Devonian explosion, like, hanging out in your pool.
Yeah, I'm definitely more on the murder hobo side of your group of friends there.
Fair.
It's not that I have a short attention span. It's just that, like, I want to kill things. That's what I want to do. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard Alice's Restaurant?
No.
It's a song by Arlo Guthrie about his... Well, first about going to Thanksgiving at Alice's Restaurant and getting arrested for littering. But they did a big littering. And then his draft into the Vietnam War.
What?
Yeah, so it's about those two things.
Those are wildly different topics to go through in one song.
They are, but they are related.
Yes.
And there is a moment where Arlo is sitting across from the therapist, the psychologist of the army recruitment. And the guy says, "Son, why do you want to join the army?" And he looks at the man right in the eye and he says, "I want to kill."
Oh, okay. And I
started bouncing up and down going, "Kill, kill." And he started bouncing up and down with me going, "Kill, kill." And we were both jumping up and down going, "Kill, kill." And then he sat down and said, "Son, you're our boy."
Well, that is an interesting song.
You should absolutely listen to it.
Arlo yeah.
Guthrie, Alice's Restaurant.
Check it out. Dear reader, I am not going to check it out.
No. And I don't blame you. It's like 10 minutes long. But
oh, God, who has the time?
it's fun. Anyway, that is what goes through my head a lot of the time when I'm just sitting there having a perfectly normal D&D day describing something, and then somebody's like, "What can I kill?"
Oh, yeah, just kill, kill.
Kill, kill. Yep. All right, so one thing that I think is interesting is that I don't actually think Dungeons & Dragons does fantasy good.
Interesting. This is a spicy take.
A little bit, yeah. I think that Dungeons & Dragons does adventure good.
Okay.
I think that fantasy fiction as a whole is more interested in ideas of magic and exploration in that than it is in stabbing goblins. Like, there's definitely a stabbing goblins element.
Goblins need stabbing.
Goblins do need stabbing. They're craving it. They're created whole cloth. They don't have children because that would make me sad. They are formed from the rocks, just wanting to throw themselves on adventurer's swords.
Correct. Okay. We're on the same page.
Yeah. But I think that the more interesting aspects of fantasy and like the exploration, like one, D&D does not do exploration very well.
No.
It has some baseline rules for how you can explore a thing, which is one of the biggest hallmarks of the genre, is exploration and discovering new things and discovering stuff that you haven't seen before. The magic system is incredibly basic and doesn't actually invite you to engage with it, really.
Okay, that's pretty legit.
But it is really good at fighting monsters.
Right.
And so, like, I don't think that as, like, fantasy fiction, Dungeons & Dragons is doing a particularly good job, but as adventure fiction is doing just fine.
Okay. Yeah, I can see your argument for why it's that other thing, not the thing that everyone thinks it is.
Mm-hmm. And, like, don't get me wrong, it is still fantasy. Like, it's, that there is magic, there is, like, all of the tropes are still there. I just don't know that Dungeons & Dragons is engaging with them effectively.
Right, fair. No, that's legit. I mean, you know, it's a very highbrow opinion to take, but when have we ever shied away from this movie?
I mean, me especially. I've got a reputation to maintain.
Yeah. The snootiest.
The pretentious one.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a hoodie made that just says the pretentious one.
I'm going to make that a villain in my next campaign.
What was that creature I sent you today? The Hawk Tua?
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. That. I love it, and I hate it so much.
I didn't do a very good job of putting the stat block together, but...
God but damn. The idea's there, and we'll tinker with it in the future and release it as a Patreon exclusive or something.
For sure.
It was very funny to me. We just need to tweak it.
For our listeners, I made a creature today that is a frog person from the swamp called the Hawk Tua. And one of the stat sections is spit on that thing. And that's going to be funny for a grand total of 20 more minutes. And by the time this releases, nobody will remember it.
I saw someone post that she had a party for her millionth follow or something. And
fantastic.
She got paid five figures to do it at some place. I'm like, this is... good for her, but also bad for us as a species. The internet.
I don't think so. I think that's lovely. I think that it's always intriguing when somebody finds a thing that grabs the zeitgeist like that and just takes it over for a minute. I don't care that it is something that is that deeply silly and just like a drunken thing you shouted into a microphone. That's perfect.
You're much more forgiving than I am.
It's not beautiful art, but it's art, and I'll take it.
More like fart. Anyways.
Anyway, genres. I don't think that Dungeons & Dragons interacts with fantasy as well as it does adventure.
Yep.
And
given your judging rubric for that, I think you are correct.
Okay. I think Ars Magica
is
probably the game that interacts with fantasy in the purest way for me.
Okay.
Where, like, you're inventing new spells based on components of magic craft that are available to you at the time.
Yeah.
And it's very explorative and interactive with the parts of fantasy that I think Dungeons and Dragons fails to interact with.
Okay.
Ars Magica for fantasy. What is the best sci-fi game you've played?
So I've played, obviously, the 40K stuff. I've played some of the mm-hmm. Star Wars stuff. When it comes to science fiction, there's not a lot of great options out there. Because, let's be honest, the role-playing game space for the general public is really primarily dominated by fantasy or
100%.
Fantasy-like offerings. I know GURPS is an option. I know Battletech is an option. But those... because Platinum did some sci-fi stuff too, right?
Yeah, they actually did Battletech.
Oh, there we go. I would say of all the ones I have actively participated in, the best for me is probably, in the spirit of like science fiction, is unfortunately probably like the GURPS system stuff. Just for its like modularity and ability to incorporate like a bunch of different stuff. And it's sort of automatically set up for like some of the sci-fi time travel BS that often happens. Right.
Willing to roll with that, yeah. Traveler, I think, interacted with science fiction in some interesting ways.
Oh, yeah.
The one that I'm most interested to try, so I haven't actually played this one yet, mm-hmm. but I do want to play it at some point, is Lancer.
Oh, yeah.
It is apparently, like, the system is apparently inspired by 4th edition D&D.
Okay.
And it's all about the pilots of mechs in a world where mech piloting is a big deal.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. I would try that. I love a mech.
I love mechs. Yeah, just like
yeah.
the idea of getting into a walking tank, even understanding that that is the worst modality of movement
yeah.
for a tank.
Who cares? Tank. Like, I want tank.
You don't want... Yeah. Like, just get me one of those, like, Boston Robotics things that's like 17 feet tall.
Yeah.
And put me in a pilot seat and let's go fight.
100%.
It seems like a great time to me. But yeah, Traveler, I think, is probably the one that interacted with the sci-fi elements the best for me, which is like spaceships and laser guns and exploring strange new worlds and finding new species and
yeah.
lasering them to death.
I was going to say, in theory, Paranoia is also a sci-fi one, but like I don't think that counts.
Paranoia engages with some different tropes.
Yeah.
And I think the absurdism of Paranoia is the one that I always come back with the most.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, it has clones. Yeah, it has like some sci-fi elements and plasma rifles and whatever. But
dystopian future, blah, blah, blah.
It's so deeply rooted in absurdism.
Yeah.
That I don't know that those tropes hold.
Yeah.
Because when you have, one of the things with genre is that if you have a choice to make that is either genre affirming or genre negating, if you want to play within the genre space, you choose the genre affirming choice.
Of course.
And when playing Paranoia, if I have a choice between a thing that is science fiction and a thing that is absurd, I'm picking the absurd thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's the thing that's going to most reinforce the themes of that game.
Yeah.
What about Westerns? You ever play a Western game?
I've never played a Western game. I'll freely admit that. Even when I talk about like playing other things that aren't fantasy, like I have barely dabbled in them. Like I just and
I mean, there aren't a ton.
Yeah, and I'm not actively seeking them out either. So it's like, well, if I don't have a group ready to go right now, then I'm just not going to like... I've never been one to be like, I actually want to do this one very, very, very specific thing, so I will like make it happen. I'm more like, well, I just want to like play, you know, an RPG with my friends. So they all want to do D&D? Great, we're doing D&D. Like, I don't... I'm not...
Well, it's not super hard to like pull in genre tropes from the thing that you want to do into D&D. And I think that's another one of the reasons that I don't think that D&D interacts with fantasy super well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really can be crowbarred into doing whatever you want it to do.
Yeah.
Right. So if I want to play a gunslinging duelist who wears a big hat and a long coat,
yeah,
that is a thing that I can do in D&D.
Right.
Have like a bit of fantasy theming on it instead of being from like a dusty dirt bowl in the middle of nowhere. I'll have like some silver filigree on my long coat.
Yeah.
But essentially the same thing, right? I'm still a gunslinger in D&D.
Yeah.
At some point, we need to play Dogs in the Vineyard.
Oh, right. Yeah, I do want to play it. I just keep forgetting that we have to do that. It's like homework.
Yeah. Yeah. It is Western themed. I think it's mostly Western setting. Like, I think the genre that it engages with is actually more biblical.
Yep. Is biblical a genre?
No, but it should be.
Yes.
I mean, biblical is a genre of fiction. It's a genre of, like, media, for sure. But I don't think that I've ever seen, other than Dogs in the Vineyard, a role-playing game that I would consider biblical.
Yeah. Well, that's for real.
Now I think I need to look it up, though, because I'm sure I'm missing some.
You let me know when you find them. I haven't sought these out, except for I have that one supplement for second edition D&D that has like they said it was like mythological weapons and stuff like that, but it's got like David's, you know, sling and the actual Ark of the Covenant.
I haven't read that book. I should probably pick that book up. Well, one thing that I think would be really interesting to play would be like, what was that cartoon about Moses and the Pharaoh?
Oh, Prince of Egypt.
Prince of Egypt, yeah. Like,
one of the last great American animated movies.
Yeah, yeah, it was fantastic. That would be a wonderful backdrop for a role-playing game, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if people would consider it biblical as much as just Egyptian.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I have played some like Egyptian-themed games that have been fine. Mostly it would be the focus on the Jewish slave population.
Right.
The story that would make it like more biblical than Egyptologist.
Yeah.
All right, what other genres of role-playing games are you aware of? Have you, like, Grimdark, obviously.
Yeah.
But that's a version of fantasy and or science fiction.
Like I said, there's like, noir or,
Have you played any noirs?
No, not my jam.
Fair. I have, and I have almost never enjoyed them.
Yeah.
There's a couple that I do dig, like the gumshoe system for one of the Cthulhu games. Robin Laws put together a great system for solving mysteries and doing like noir eldritch horror.
Okay.
And one of the things that I love about it is that the skills that you would be using to solve mysteries and like do your job as a mystery solver, you just succeed at them.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, it's just your job. If there is a clue in the room and clue finding is a thing you do, then you find the clue.
I do like the idea that like I've been training at this. This is everything in the world takes a certain amount of experience to do. Do I have enough? Like,
well, and like, it is such a beautiful answer to that situation that I think we've all been in. Where there is a clue in this room.
Yeah.
Nobody has rolled high enough to find it.
Yeah. And you have to sit there and you have to figure out a way to just be like, please check over there.
And then you just have like a random gnome run in and like knock it off the table or some shit. Like, yep.
I hate doing it, but you have to do it.
Okay. So I know I'm not the funny one.
Okay.
I am the pretentious one that's going on the hoodie.
Yeah.
But I did hear a great joke today that I want to share with you that's related to gnomes.
All right, hit me with it.
What do gnomes and halflings have in common?
What?
Christopher. Very little.
God, I...
I could feel you coming off of the microphone. That was fantastic.
I quit. I quit. This show is over. I'm done.
Very little. good. Speaking of mysteries, doing like a classic Hardy Boys style mystery game.
Okay.
Some Agatha Christie nonsense.
Okay.
I
think I mentioned before, I did read a lot of Hardy Boys as a kid. More so Encyclopedia Brown, but like, yeah, Hardy Boys is resonant for me.
Yeah. It's a hard genre to run in.
Yeah.
Mostly because like the creation of good and interesting mysteries in that style is a difficult thing to do.
Well, I was going to say, like, it's a genre that isn't good for improvisation.
No.
Like, you need a lot of scripting. And, you know, we've talked about it before, but, like, that railroading can be good. But in this case, the necessitated amount of railroading could really put a damper on your overall game. Like, if you want to do that, just write a book.
The urge to go Scooby-Doo with it is a little too high, too, where it's just like, I don't actually know who stole the 42 gold bars, but my players are real convinced that it's Jerry, this night security guy, so
yeah.
I guess we're just going to take the mask off and it's Jerry. you guys found those clues.
Yeah, yeah.
Jerry. Or you do the rug pull and it's just like, no, it was me all along. And it's like twirly mustache, the evil Ned Sneedley.
Right. All I can think of with that is that, I don't know if you've ever seen that episode of Bob's Burgers where Linda decides to put on a dinner theater.
No.
She goes to a dinner theater, is enamored by it, and decides to put one on in their restaurant, and makes up her own show to do, and decides that the twist of the mystery is that it was her the whole time, except she starts the show by saying, don't worry, the murderer definitely isn't me. And then
oh, no.
goes through the whole thing and then comes out the other end and is like, just kidding, it was me the whole time.
For anybody who is listening to us, if you want to put on your own dinner theater, don't.
yeah, good answer.
Just give up on that dream. But if you have to, if it is
you don't, required you of don't you, have to. You never have to.
Do somebody else's.
Yeah.
There's so many plays out there that you can like put on in a small space. Just look up one-act plays. You'll find something.
I don't know if anybody out there has told people before, like, it seems like nobody really knows this, but there's other people who've made, like, whole careers out of writing these things, and they got paid, like, a lot of money, and they're way better at it than you, so just, like, let them do it and steal it. It's fine. Steal all your art. Every piece of art should be stolen.
So, some of them are even good.
Some are good, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, not, first of all, get it out of your head. Not everything has to be, like, The King and I, right? That's fine. But it should not also just be like felt like it was thrown together by a local janitor or whatever.
Speaking of, you know what I really miss about Edmonton?
The local art scene.
The Fringe.
Oh.
Fringe Festival here is not good.
I have a friend preparing for a play for Fringe, and I love her and want to support her, but I will not go see a Fringe performance. I have been burned too many times.
I have done a couple of Fringe performances, and I have seen a lot of them. And if anything is going to give me a great appreciation for how hard it is to put a show on, like a live show with an audience, it is seeing how often Fringe shows just suck.
Yeah. Yeah, I do have some experience putting on those kind of shows, and that's why I got tricked into going to see my friend's one woman show, but you know, never again.
Yeah. No, it's a good time if that is a thing that you like. You kind of have to temper your expectations going into Fringe shows, and I feel like the same is also true for your friend throwing a dinner theater
first
time or ever. We should. Nope. Never mind. I was about to say we should invest in a dinner theater. We should like put something together. And then I was like, no, I'm going against my own fucking advice.
Yeah, no, right we now. Should not. We should definitely not do that.
My ADHD is just like, hey, you know what would be great? Let's do dinner theater.
my childhood best friend who desperately wanted to pursue some sort of career in like the theater arts or comedy, wound up doing several years at Jubilations, and
whew.
Yeah, it's I tell you what, it's not a career for the faint of heart.
No,
I'm glad he's given that up and now manages an office furniture company or whatever. But
wow,
yeah,
that's I think you've just described what it looks like to give up on your dreams.
Yeah,
it's just sell furniture, I guess.
Yeah, it's I can speak from experience. I have suffered. I did dinner theaters. I am actually responsible for rescuing a dinner theater at one point.
Wow.
Yeah. Big mistake. Yep. I did on purpose. I was a young, naive teenager who was gung-ho to understudy a man who decided to have a temper tantrum the week of the performance. And I memorized the entire script in 2 days and then went on to perform his role.
Wow.
Saving the production. It was a mistake. I should have let it die.
I've never actually done dinner theater. I've done a lot of theater.
Yeah.
There's never been a meal involved. And I feel like that's a weird line to draw in the sand, I guess. Considering like how weird theater is in general.
Yeah, it's awfully elitist of you to be like, well, at least I didn't serve food.
Yeah, like at least nobody had like chicken juice dripping down their chin while I was up on stage pretending to be an adult avocado or some random bullshit. Like I know what goes into some of these fucking plays. It's
an adult avocado.
Avocado instead of the young avocado. Whose coming of age story it is.
Yeah, you were describing an episode of VeggieTales. and 100% VeggieTales has a dinner theater. I know it in my heart. I've never seen it. I know it.
Oh, absolutely they do. I saw Dog Man has a like play that is out.
Sorry, who?
Dog Man. Your kids are in about the right age group for Dog Man?
Nope, I don't expose them to media.
Oh, okay. You're familiar with Captain Underpants?
Yes.
Okay, so the author of Captain Underpants has a comic book series called Dog Man.
Oh, God. Okay.
And it is better than it has any right to be. And they have a play. And now it's going to be a movie soon. So, it'll be fun.
Gross. Anyways.
Anyways,
let's get back on track and wrap up this runaway train of thought.
last thoughts on genre. So I touched on it just a little bit with like if you are in genre and you have a choice to make, you should usually make the genre affirming choice. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that isn't always going to be the case because your players have agency. And your characters also should have at least the simulation of agency.
Our recommendation is to remove all agency of your characters for better stories.
Yeah. If you want to have better stories, just have your DM write a novel. And
then you will act it out.
You know what? Okay. Here's the idea.
Oh, no.
Here's the idea. For best interacting with genre, what you're going to do is you're going to have your DM write out the entire story that they want to do.
Okay.
And then you and your friends are going to each take a part in that story.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to perform those parts in front of a bunch of people eating dinner.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.